131873 is the number. 25 minutes to 10.
And now, the Memory Health Show, brought to you by Suvenaid. Go to memorydrink.com.au for a free sample.
Yeah, the health show, Memory Health Show, thanks to Suvenaid, great sponsors of us. And it is about the brain, and it's really telling us about brain health and a better understanding of dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And tonight we've got two very special guests joining us. Marie McCabe, who is the CEO of Alzheimer's Australia. Good evening to you, Marie.
Good evening.
And Associate Professor Michael Woodward, who's the Head of Memory Clinical and Aged Care Research with Austin Health. Professor, good evening to you.
Good evening, John.
Now, we're ready for our lesson. We're going to learn a little bit tonight. So let's kick off. Maybe Marie, you could help us with this. Because if I had two brains sitting in front of me, you know, I looked at a healthy brain and one where you had either dementia or Alzheimer's disease, I mean, what would we see? What are the changes? How does it manifest?
Well, one of the changes that you would see, John, is there'd be a difference in size. So there's some shrinkage in the brain, and Alzheimer's disease is a physical brain disease that causes dementia, and it results in impaired memory, in thinking and behaviour. And it's named after Alois Alzheimer, the German doctor. He first described it in 1907. It's progressive, and what we see is a progressive degeneration of brain cells. So in looking at the brain, you would see that there are some plaques, so there'll be amyloid in the brain, and the other protein is tau, and that tau causes tangles. And so the build-up often causes disruption in messages from the brain to in terms of the sorts of actions and Alzheimer's disease is always associated with the loss of function, but you would see a very marked difference in the shape of the brain and the size of the brain.
Does it happen? I mean, there has to be, I assume, deterioration as you get older. So is this a much more rapid deterioration, or is it quite different to what you see just through the aging process?
Well, it's interesting because some of the pathological changes in the brain can occur 10 to 20 years before any clinical symptoms manifest. So the person may have it for a very long time and not notice very much in terms of change. But the sorts of things that, particularly with Alzheimer's disease, that people will notice is short-term memory loss. And the symptoms that appear depend very much on the area of the brain that's affected. So with Alzheimer's disease, it's the hippocampus that's responsible for short-term memory. And if it's a dementia in another part of the brain, it may not be memory that's impacted at all. It may be what we notice is a change in personality. There's a change in mood. The person may become apathetic, but it's always associated with a loss of function. So something that the person was quite adept at doing beforehand, they're no longer able to do. Might be something like reading a map or managing their finances or finding directions.
Yeah. What's most interesting, John, is that, as Marie said, this starts decades before symptoms, and that gives us a great opportunity to intervene and perhaps stop this process. It's not normal aging. Some changes do occur in all parts of the body as we age, but what we're describing with dementia and Alzheimer's disease is a disease of the brain. And we know, as Marie said, that it starts in one part of the brain and often spreads. If we can get it there at that early stage, if we can stop those tau tangles or those amyloid plaques spreading throughout the brain, we may be able to actually stop Alzheimer's in its tracks or certainly delay its onset.
Yeah. Look, we're going to talk about Suvenaid in a moment, and it's the sponsor, and it's about, you know, nutrition. And when you look at the list of ingredients, it's about nutrition. So if we take a step back, because we're still trying to work out, I'm assuming, where all of this starts and how all of it starts, but I think we all know a situation where we don't drink enough water. Maybe we go through a day and a half where we eat really badly. We might forget to have a couple of meals, and we start to feel crook because we haven't provided our body with net nutrition. How much of that is a factor as we try and work out how this is affecting people over the years?
Certainly, we know that good nutrition is a protective factor. So if we have a diet aligned with the Mediterranean diet, and I'm talking about what they eat in the villages of Italy and Greece, for instance, not necessarily what we think of in restaurants as indicative. If we have a good Mediterranean diet, plenty of fish, plenty of fruit and vegetables, some pasta, not too much red meat, not too many desserts, olive oil is the preferred oil. If we eat that sort of diet, we'll certainly reduce our individual risk of developing Alzheimer's. It won't necessarily protect us, but there's a much better chance of protecting us. And we certainly don't want to have bad nutrition and, as you say, miss meals, miss fluid intake, etc. We shouldn't rely on a single supplement to overcome that. A good diet is very important, and then we can look at adding supplements on top of that.
Sure. I'm just intrigued with both of you, because we often talk about, we talk about food in terms of the taste of the food and going out and eating. We talk about it in terms of, you know, losing weight and looking better. But maybe we don't talk about it enough as a fuel to keep the various bits of our body going. We certainly do that when we talk about cars. We don't seem to do it as much as we should in relation to our bodies.
And I think, John, it's a really good point. I think that we don't do that, and we don't educate early enough about the importance of nutrition and the role that it plays in our well-being and our energy levels, all of the things that are associated with us living a full and healthy life.
Yeah, and everyone listening to us, apart from those who've been either directly or indirectly affected by it, everyone listening is thinking in the back of their mind, gee, could this be me? Could this be my husband, my father, my mother? So you don't know. It's quite random, isn't it? I mean, there are some markers in families, but ultimately it's very random. So is there anything you can do to try and pinpoint it, that someone might be going in that direction?
Look, I think you've hit the nail on the head, John. I think we should all live our life as if we individually have a high risk of developing dementia and Alzheimer's, because the truth is there's about 500,000 Australians currently, and that's going to rise to 1.1 million by the early 2050s. So there is a very high risk for anybody. But if you want to work out what our own individual risk is, we can look at our family. If there's a number of family members, particularly our mum or our dad or our brothers or sisters, we are at an increased risk. Certainly as we get on, if we've got a family where most people live into their 80s and 90s, again, we've got a fairly high risk. And also, if we haven't been attending to these risk factors, it's never too late. But we should start looking from middle age onwards. So start thinking about our diet, keeping physical exercise up at good levels, keeping socially and mentally active. These should be areas that we attend to from our 40s and 50s. Brain health begins really from birth, because education and social circumstances are a factor there too. But certainly it's never too late to start to look after our brain, just like we look after our heart.
17 to 10, just in terms of that physical side, you talked about doing exercise and trying to keep your body moving. What about what your brain's doing? So, for instance, things that are quite passive, where you might sit and look at screens and watch television, as opposed to, I know people talk about doing Sudoku and crossword puzzles and really exercising the brain. Is that something you can do? Does the brain work differently for different things?
Well, it's absolutely important, John, that we exercise our brain, and the brain loves to learn new things, and the brain learns new things in social interactions. So the more we interact with others, the better it is for our brain, and our brain health is as important as our physical health and well-being. And one of the things we talk about, Sudoku, but the brain gets used to that. So what just happens is we just get better at doing Sudoku. So we need to look at ways to continually stretch the brain. Learning a new language. And one of the things they say that is really great is actually learning as we physically do something. So learning to dance, learning another language I mentioned earlier, but staying socially engaged and socially active is a really important part of our health and well-being.
Well, so someone middle-aged, you know, thinks, I've always wanted to learn Italian or whatever language it might be, think, all right, I'm going to do that. And that'll help your brain. Exercise.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow, all right. Might be something I'll book in for tomorrow.
Go do it.
All right. We're going to take a short break and come back, because I've got some more questions in relation to this, and particularly, look, Suvenaid's the sponsor here, but in terms of how this works, and particularly things like atrophy and brain atrophy, Professor, I'm going to ask you about all of this in just one moment and see how all of this works, and particularly what treatments there are, because there's obviously a mix of treatments once you're starting to go down this path. We'll do that shortly, but right now it is 16 minutes to 10. It is Knights, and you're on 3AW, 2GB, 4BC, 2CC in stations across Australia. Memory Health Show, it is here at 12 and a half minutes to 10. 131873 is the number. We're joined here tonight by Marie McCabe, the CEO of Alzheimer's Australia, and also Professor Michael Woodward, Head of Memory Clinical and Aged Care Research with Austin Health. I was congratulating myself during that break for having said Marie, not Mari, and then I've gone and done it. So we joke about this. It's interesting, you know, I was about to say, maybe my mind's going. Maybe I'm going down that path. We do joke about this, don't we? About might be early Alzheimer's. People say it in jest. I wanted to ask you, Marie. I know Dr. Ross Walker, who appears on this station, often says that the thing he prescribes for patients for their health, and number one thing is happiness, just your well-being, your mental happiness and being happy. I'm wondering about the instance of depression and stress that people have. Number one, that's got to be bad for people who are suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's, but we know whether that can bring it on. Does it have a physical effect on the brain if people start to get very depressed, as they often do?
What we know, John, is that depression can increase our risk of developing dementia. And one of the things that can lead to depression is being socially isolated. So staying socially engaged is really important for our mental health and well-being, as well as reducing our risk of dementia. So there's certainly a lot to be said for doing the things that we love, being with the people that we love, and making sure that we take care of that. And I think that sometimes we don't think sufficiently about that as an area that really supports our health and well-being.
Now, across to the professor, because the way this manifests itself is brain atrophy. Just what is that? Can you just explain that for us?
Yeah, atrophy is a word that means shrinkage. And what we know is that as Alzheimer's and other related diseases progress, we see increasing shrinkage. It starts usually in what we call the temporal lobe and then spreads to other regions of the brain. And what we're seeing is actually the effects of the loss of connections between brain cells, which we call synapses. So if we can do something that can increase the health of our synapses, increase the number of our synapses, we can help to reduce the rate of shrinkage. And at the moment, many of the drugs that are being trialled for Alzheimer's are using brain shrinkage as an indicator, or at least a reduction of brain shrinkage as an indicator that the drug is working. But at the moment, they're still in the experimental stage. We do have one nutritional intervention which has been shown to reduce shrinkage in this temporal region, the hippocampus in particular, that Marie mentioned a moment ago. So we've got something already that combats shrinkage and can increase the health of our synapses and the number of connections between our synapses.
So this is Suvenade, because I've looked at the side of the bottle, and there's a whole range of nutritional elements and food elements. It's quite a complicated mix, isn't it?
It is indeed. It's a mixture of a number of components, but it's been specifically formulated to feed into the mechanisms that the brain uses to produce new synapses. Interestingly, the brain is basically a fatty computer. It's amazing that a computer can work in an environment that's about 90% fat. And the surface of brain cells, the synapses in particular, are made of fats. And these fats are in a particular balance in Suvenade to help make new synapses. But there's other factors that we need there also useful for making synapses, and that's choline and uridine. We can get most of these from our diet, but we'd have to eat vast amounts of them. And when the brain is under attack from the plaques and tangles that Marie was mentioning before, then those synapses are being gobbled up and turned over and damaged very rapidly. The brain will not get enough from our diet. We need to supplement our nutrients, and that's where Suvenade has been specifically formulated to feed into those mechanisms that make new synapses and reduce the atrophy, the shrinkage.
So it provides the nutrition and stimulates the growth. So what's the difference between a product like Suvenade and a medicine that might be prescribed?
Well, there are medicines that we use for the more severe stages of Alzheimer's. When it gets into the dementia stage, there's drugs that boost some of the transmitters, some of the chemicals that help to activate the synapses, but they're not changing the structure of the synapses themselves. They're not preserving the synapses. And we believe from a 3-year study that's just been presented earlier this year, that Suvenade, if used early enough in the mild cognitive impairment stage, can actually have an effect on those synapses.
I imagine, Marie, a diagnosis of Alzheimer's dementia can be quite traumatic, and I think you could potentially feel really isolated, certainly if you're alone, and then even in a situation where there's a family around you. So how delicately do you need to deal with it from the outside with the person?
Yeah, look, John, one of the things our clients share with us is that a diagnosis of dementia can be one of the most profoundly isolating diagnoses. And I think it's really important that family members and friends, continue to be available to support the person, to allow the person to share at their pace and to let them know that they're there for them. And it's not only isolating for the person with the diagnosis, it can be very isolating also for the carer or family members. And I remember Ida Buttrow sharing at one of our events that when somebody gets a diagnosis of cancer, family and friends rally round, and often with the diagnosis of dementia, people disappear. And it's a disease of the brain, and it's not something that the person can help. You know, they may change in terms of their behaviour or their mood at certain times, but it's really important that social support, family connection, and knowing that people are available is a really important part of ensuring a positive experience living with dementia.
Yeah, because like I'm imagining, and I'm assuming from both of you, it's got a different pace in terms of the progression of the disease, depending on the person. There's no standard progression. It can happen faster in others. Is that right?
Absolutely. And one of the things that's really important is to get the right information and support. And if people have a diagnosis or they have questions or concerns, please call the National Dementia Helpline on 1800 100 500. And our team of experts are there to provide the information that people need. And we can also provide support and counselling if that's required.
And look, you can't reverse it, can you? It just doesn't. There's nothing at the moment that allows it to be reversed.
At the moment, we believe we can certainly slow it down with some of the preventative approaches we've mentioned, nutrition, keeping our brain active. In the early stages, a certain combination of these with Suvenade, the nutrient we've been talking about, might slow things down. But no, at this stage, we can't reverse it. We can't cure it. It's much better to prevent it. We may eventually develop drugs that can help. Marie and myself have both been at a big conference overseas just last week, where there's some very promising developments in intervening at the very earliest stages with more traditional medical drugs. These are trials that are in progress at my centre at the Austin and other sites around Australia and around the world. But at this stage, no, we don't have a magic bullet that can eliminate or remove Alzheimer's from the brain. We've got to concentrate on the prevention approaches we've been talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. And look, I'm always fascinated by this because you've gone to a conference. The best brains from all over the world are there, and they're having a few approaches they're taking, but at the moment there's still nothing. Could come up any time, but so far, at the moment, it's a matter of just slowing it down.
We don't believe that it's always going to be that way, though, John. We have made big progress with many of the degenerative diseases of the brain. Yep. Multiple sclerosis is one. We can certainly cure the symptoms of Parkinson's disease for a period of time. So there are neurological conditions we've made big headway with, and there's a huge amount of research money around the world. Never enough, of course.
Yep.
It's great to hear that in Australia another $21 million has been granted to work on projects to help prevent dementia and to also track it to recognise where it is and who it's going to affect. These were only announced a few days ago. So a lot's being done on the research front, and don't believe that there's not going to be a big breakthrough in our lifetime. There will be.
But with the Suvenade, if people start, they can take it for over an extended period of time, can't they?
We can actually expect people to be prepared to take it for 3 years. That's where the major benefit has been shown to occur.
All right. Look, I appreciate that. Most interesting, and certainly we've learnt quite a lot. Marie McCabe from Alzheimer's Australia and also Professor Michael Wood. We'd love to have you on tonight, the Memory Health Show. We'll be back on next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, John.
And the news comes up next.